Welcome to the Klamath Tribes podcast. I'm Ken Smith, and joining me today in studio is Tim Sexton, the wildfire and program manager for the Klamath Tribes. Welcome.
Thank you.
We don't talk much. As a matter of fact, this is your first podcast you've done with me.
That's right.
But I figured this is a good time to talk before the fire season starts. But let's go backwards a little bit. You had some men from our wildfire program down in Pasadena for the Eaton Fire.
That's correct. Not only the Eaton Fire, but other fires that were starting after the Eaton Fire. We had folks at a staging area as well as an engine assigned to the Eaton Fire.
And I did an article in the newspaper about them. I just found out, I read the other day that they pretty much think the fire started with what they call a zombie power line. Did you see that?
I saw something to that effect, and sometimes those fires are easy to determine the cause, and sometimes they have to just do some detective work and rule out a variety of other causes and zone in on the one that actually started it.
Mm-hmm. Let's get into the federal cuts, because what I've been reading is it's going to impact how we respond to wildfires because we won't have the manpower or money to do so in Oregon. Have you seen that, and is that true?
So there are cuts to all of the federal agencies that respond to fires. The administration has said they're not going to cut firefighters. However, there are many people that support the firefighters that don't really carry shovels and Pulaskis and chainsaws.
I.e.?
The logistics people, the planning people, some of the folks that manage the caterers on fires. And so if any of those folks are terminated, then that will impact our ability to manage large fires.
What about our budget?
Our budget, as far as we know, remains intact. We operate on grants as well as reimbursements when we work on wildfires.
Is that pretty solid, do you think, or can anything happen?
Well, anything could happen, but we believe that we'll be okay with the reimbursements that are starting to come in from our past wildfire assignments.
I would think that our government and leaders would realize the importance of retaining full capacity to respond to wildfires in this country, given the magnitude of wildfires we've seen in the past few years.
I agree 100%, and there are many efforts being undertaken as we speak to ensure the administration knows the impacts of some of those cuts and terminations on the overall fire efforts, not just the firefighters themselves.
Mm-hmm. How does our staff stand right now for response at the Klamath Tribes?
We currently have a wildland fire module and a Type 3 engine that are available. We have a Type 6 engine, and we can staff it from members of the wildland fire module. The wildland fire module at full strength is 10 persons. The engines are 3-person staffed. We're down 2 or 3 people right now total, and we intend to advertise for those positions sometime next month or later this spring.
So how many do we have on staff right now, full-time?
We have 11 folks full-time on staff right now.
Are you happy with that?
No, we need to fill those vacant positions.
Is this to maintain our own property? First and foremost?
So there's a couple of reasons for the wildland fire program. One of them is to be able to respond to fires that are affecting the homeland, most of which is managed currently by the Fremont-Wainema National Forest, which is not adequately staffed for fires right now.
You mean like their side, the National Forest side?
Yeah, currently the Fremont-Wainema, actually over the past several years, has not been able to fully staff their engines that they have on the forest.
Why not?
The Chemult, Silver Lake, and Paisley ranger stations or districts are not as desirable places for folks to apply for jobs, and so they've been unable to fill the engine captain positions in those locations. Consequently, they haven't been able to staff engines out of those districts. And those districts, their response zones are part of the homeland. So our staffing up a wildland fire program is helping to protect the homeland.
So we have some added responsibility to fill in for those voids.
Yes.
And we need more people to do so.
We are short right now. We intend to bring our staffing up to full level by summertime when the fires are starting.
So if anybody's listening, they want to be a part of the program and apply for a job, what should they do?
They should contact me. We don't have any advertisements out right now. And so they can contact me to find out what the mission is and what the job might be like. And then I would advise them to wait until the jobs are advertised. If they give me their names, I can make sure they get notified when those jobs are advertised.
And we do so on the Klamath Tribes website.
Yes.
Very good. Last year's wildfires, how would you compare it to previous years? What do we anticipate this year?
Last year's wildfires in Oregon set a record, 1.9 million acres burned, more than any other year in modern history since we've had organized fire suppression. And the reason for that was a severely dry and abnormally windy summer and fall and late fall. Fire season really didn't stop until November last year. This year, we have received a lot of moisture in January and February, and it's snowing today in March. That said, it won't take much to get us back into the conditions that we were in last summer. Next week is supposed to be sunny, and beyond that, we don't really know what the rest of the spring will bring, but typically we'll get a little bit of moisture, but things start drying out from this point on.
Is this going to just be an ongoing issue for years to come? Wildfires out of control that we must try to fight? Or are we going to get ahead of the game, ahead of the curve?
So one of the things that we intend to do with our fire program to get ahead of the game is to do prescribed burning and then cultural burning to reduce the impacts of wildfire. That burning won't stop a wildfire, but the fire can spread through an area that's been prescribed burned or a cultural burning applied, and the impacts will be much less. So currently, when a fire sweeps through an area on the forest, the homelands, many, if not all, of the large old trees are burned. If we do underburning prior to a wildfire, then the fire can move through there and not torch out all those trees. And it's a lot easier to catch at a roadside when we've done that underburning in advance.
Mm-hmm. We had a close call fire here in Chiloquin. How's the local area right now? How much work do we need to do to barricade the place from future fires getting close to towns and houses?
Yeah, you're right. The Copperfield fire was a near miss for our AMBODOT facility. And we had a fire the same day as Treaty Days last summer, right on the ridge above Chiloquin, that because of the rapid response was able to be stopped. That said, the fuels that are immediately adjacent to Chiloquin are in dire need of treatments, and that's one of the areas that we intend to start doing some prescribed burning.
Very good. You have a lot of paperwork in front of you. I'll let you take the agenda from here.
Okay, so we do have firefighters that are assigned to fires in the southern region right now. The southern region is experiencing a fire season, much like Oregon experienced last summer. On every single day for the last week, I've looked at the National Situation Report, and there are hundreds of fires that are starting in that southern region every day.
When you say southern region, where are we talking exactly?
We're talking from Texas to Florida and as far north as Virginia, Missouri, and that part of the United States. So Texas, Oklahoma, and all of those states to the east.
Why do you follow those areas? Do we plan on sending personnel there?
We have personnel there.
Oh.
And we've got personnel at the Seminole Reservation in southern Florida, where we're helping out some of our brother Seminole tribes. We have folks at Uvalde, Texas, where we're helping out the Texas Forest Service. And again, I think I mentioned to you in a previous conversation that the reason we do that is because we rely on them to come help us when we're in need. Like last summer, we had folks from all over the country come to Central Oregon and Southern Oregon to help with the wildfire situation. Now that we are not in a severe fire danger, it's snowing, we can afford to go help them in their time of need.
How many people do we have there?
Currently, we have three personnel at the Seminole Reservation. They're staffing one of their engines. At Texas Forest Service in southern Texas, we have a Type 6 engine with three of our personnel on that engine that drove to Texas. And we also have Deputy Fire Program Manager Tyler Otterson in North Carolina.
Wow. We're all over. Are these all tribal lands that we're in?
Not all of them, but any of those fires in Texas or Florida or North Carolina have potential to hit tribal land. Some of the fires in Texas and Oklahoma, particularly because it's a grass fuel for the most part, they can burn 200,000 or 300,000 acres in a day. And so it can go miles and miles. It may start on private land or national forest land, but it could reach tribal land very easily.
Mm-hmm. What's that little graph there?
So the National Fire Center produces fire and fuels advisories when the conditions are severe. And in this case, today, they've issued an advisory for the Southern Plains, which is mostly northern Texas and Oklahoma. And it's showing that the energy release component, which is one of the metrics we use to determine how severe a fire might burn or how intense a fire might burn, it's currently showing a record for today's date of dryness and fuel flammability. And the trend that it's showing is continuing to go up and up, and the conditions there are as severe as they get for this day of the year and likely will continue that way for the rest of this month.
I mean, there's no place in this country that's not under a fire caution or potential wildfire breakout.
The last couple of years have been that way. We're currently in a respite because of the snow, but I expect us to get into severe conditions in a month or two.
Yeah. And then you get the smoke that you inhale. The wildfire smoke is that secondary health hazard.
Yes, and folks that have lived in the Chiloquin area for years know that when we get fires in Northern California, we can suffer for weeks, if not months, from smoke in the basin that collects.
Yeah, it's not in the brochure when you move here. And I don't know, it's kind of depressing. This climate's not getting better, it's getting warmer, and it doesn't look like we have an administration that wants to address it. It's actually going to ignore it.
Yeah, correct. If you talk to any firefighter that's been around for a decade or two, there's none of those that are disbelievers of climate change. We all know that it's happening. That when I started my career, it was unusual to have a fire more than a few hundred acres. A 1,000-acre fire or a 5,000-acre fire was a huge event. These days, those are spot fires in comparison to the size of the fires that we're getting.
We're losing so much forest. How much of that forest should have been there to begin with?
So on the homeland that's currently managed by the Fremont Wainema, the forested land is about the same as what it always was, but the density of the trees is much greater. Historically, there were large trees that were spaced apart because of frequent fire, much of it set by Klamath tribe members, their ancestors. And that kept the underbrush and the small trees from accumulating and serving as ladder fuels when a surface fire moves through an area. Then there weren't ladders to carry it up into the crowns of the trees. Nowadays, in much of the forest, as a fire sweeps through an area, there are small trees and shrubs that have grown and become decadent, and the surface fire can climb into the crowns of a large old tree very readily.
When we say old trees, we're talking old growth, large trees of how many years, 100?
Yeah, so the ponderosa pine can live to be 500 years or greater, and those trees will become 30 to 40 or 50 inches in diameter. And, of course, every year they drop seedlings, and the seedlings will grow. And if we don't have frequent fire, those little seedlings will become trees large enough to carry a surface fire into the crowns of the large old trees. And so to be considered an old-growth tree, it's going to be 150 to 200 years old and 20 inches in diameter or greater.
How much of the forest is old growth?
Not very much. I don't have the specific numbers, but it's a fraction of what used to be.
So this could be a problem that started back in the logging days 50, 60, 100 years ago.
The activities that we started doing back at the turn of the 20th century in the 1900s has led to the conditions that we're in now with the stand structure and the flammability of the forest. And you take the increase in density of the forest, and then you add climate change, and it's really created conditions that are very difficult to manage when it comes to a fire start.
I mean, they cut down all the large trees back in those days. They went after the old growth.
Absolutely. That was the most economically efficient way of harvesting and getting money.
Nobody was looking 50, 70 years down the road. They were like, take those big trees down. Let's make some money. And whatever happens, happens. But nobody could have ever forecasted our current conditions of hazard.
No, at the time when they started doing that, there was no sense that that was going to lead to the conditions we're in now.
Boy, we really screwed things up.
And it's not just here. It's across the West.
I mean, they took old growth down everywhere in this country, from the East Coast to the West Coast.
Yep, they did.
And the old growth was how it protected itself. That was the firewall of Mother Nature.
That with the frequent fire.
Yeah.
Frequent fire, just a surface fire, didn't damage the old growth, the large old trees. But when the additional young trees were allowed to grow after they had excluded fire, then when a lightning fire occurred, it could get the fire to the crowns again.
Yeah, we got a real conundrum.
We do.
And there's no solution for it, as I can see, except it's going to keep burning.
Well, we think that some of the restoration activities that we're planning in the Natural Resource Department, both with fire and with some mechanical treatments, where we focus on the small diameter material under the large old trees, will help change that condition and make those stands less vulnerable to wildfire.
Yeah, but how many acres are we looking at to get to a point where we've quelled it to where we feel safe?
There are hundreds of thousands of acres that need treatment.
And do we have the personnel to do it?
Not yet, but we've got a start. And so we're never going to get there if we don't start, and that's what this program is doing. It's starting those efforts.
So is everybody working together? Do we all see the problem and the solution?
I think so. The big question is how do we prioritize where we start? Because we want to protect our most valuable resources first. And so we're working on a risk assessment that will help us prioritize where we start, that those treatments would give us the biggest bang for our buck in protecting the values that are most important to the Klamath tribes. We've conducted one session to identify those values, and we're going to follow up with another one.
Nobody talks much about wildlife and the impact of the loss of forests and these fires themselves on wildlife. How much damage to the ecosystem is causing like a downward turn of deer population or the bear and the other animals that live off of the forest?
Well, certainly wildfires that burn at high intensity, like the Bootleg fire that killed most of the trees, leaves a problem for the wildlife. Their habitat has been changed significantly, and most often those animals will move to other areas. In some cases, they're not going to be able to survive. But several years after a fire, the new growth will attract animals back.
New growth of?
New growth of shrubs and grasses and forbs and even trees.
So we should see the deer population increasing down the road here?
There's other problems with the deer population, including fawn survival, that may be hampered by some of those other animals we just talked about, the bears, wolves, coyotes.
Mountain lion.
And predation. So it's a complex problem. Fire is part of it, but it's not the only thing that's affecting the wildlife.
Is there anything else in your agenda there that we want to point out before we wrap it up?
So we've got folks that left a week ago or so to Texas and Florida. Most often when we send people to fires, they've got a 14-day assignment that's guaranteed, that we guarantee will allow them to work that long. And then if the fire situation persists, they can ask for an extension, the host unit, the folks in Texas or Florida. And sometimes we will honor that, and sometimes we'll need them back here. In this case, we're going to try and maintain our engine in Texas as long as they need it, and our folks in on the Seminole Reservation as long as they need it, or at least until things dry out enough here where we can start doing prescribed burning. So I anticipate that we'll have people in Texas for at least another 2 or 3 weeks, and as well as in Florida.
Very good. What about the training that goes into these positions?
There is a tremendous amount of training. Basic firefighter is a one-week course, but there's additional add-ons that need to be undertaken. So usually it's a week and a half to 2 weeks of training to get somebody fully qualified just to be a basic firefighter. And then if you are assigned to an engine, we have engine training. If you're assigned to a crew, there are crew dynamics trainings. And then if you get into a leadership position, there are many leadership position trainings. On average, our firefighters are going to undergo about a month of training every year between refreshers, the basic training, and advanced training so that they build their skills.
I'm amazed at how much firefighting is going on, and yet you don't hear about deaths of firefighters. I watched that movie. They had the firefighters. They got caught.
Only the Brave.
Yeah, and that was horrible. They died a horrible death as the fire came in on them. They couldn't get out. Given the precarious situations you're always in, it's surprising that never happens more often that they get caught in a bad situation.
Well, and that's where the training is essential. And the training both for our lower-level firefighters, the entry-level folks, as well as the ones that supervise them, is critical to maintaining that safety record that we're currently enjoying. If you go back 20 years ago, we were experiencing 50 to 60 firefighter deaths a year. And the last 5 years or so, it's down to single digits in most cases. And that's with close to 100,000 wildland firefighters that are assigned to 80,000 or so wildfires in this country.
Yeah, it's hats off to the safety of the process.
And it just reinforces the notion that we need to continue with the training and any other efforts that may make firefighters safe. Also, a lot of times the public don't understand the dynamics of a fire, and it may not be putting up a lot of smoke or flames at a certain point, and they're wondering why we're not getting in there right now and attacking it aggressively. And so we're looking at weather forecasts and other attributes of the fire that may cause it to change suddenly, and we're not going to deploy our firefighters to a fire that, you know, immediately adjacent to it if the forecast is suggesting that the winds may come up and the currently low flame lengths transition to 10 or 20-foot flame lengths in a short period of time.
So when we have our local personnel fighting fires around this area, are you like at the helm, the commander?
It depends on the specific fire, but yes, I will take charge if it's a fire that our folks are on and they don't have somebody of my skill level to manage the fire.
Must be a nervous time for you.
It can be.
Stressful.
It can be.
Are you okay?
Yeah. I've done it for many years, so I don't take it lightly, though, and I'm approach every fire as a unique experience. And so you need to look at all the variables, the fuels, what the weather's doing now and what it's going to do in an hour, as well as the crews and the equipment that you have on the fire. One of the things that has been the most dangerous situation for firefighters recently, because of all the large fires we've occurred, are snags. When we get a fire in an area that's burned over in the last few years, there'll be standing snags that can fall on our firefighters because the current fire may weaken the lower portion of that snag and cause it to tip over silently. We've got 400,000 acres now of snags in the bootleg fire area, as well as the 242 fire, another 14,000 acres that are very hazardous for firefighters. So when we get starts in those footprints of those old fires, we are particularly careful about how we deploy our firefighters, just from the snag aspect.
What is a snag?
A snag is a tree that's been killed and is still standing. And so oftentimes it won't have branches even. It'll just be a single solitary bole that's standing. And as years go on, that snag becomes less and less structurally viable. And so a snag that's been there for 10 or 15 years is particularly prone to falling over with any little additional fire or a strong wind. And of course, with fires, they'll produce their own winds that can topple over snags.
I guess the general public should be aware of that as well, walking around out there, hunters.
Absolutely. It does become more dangerous when a fire is occurring, of course, but any fire that's more than 5 or 6 years old, the fire footprint, where there are a lot of snags, is a dangerous place to be.
Never knew that. Very good. How old are you?
I just turned 73.
Jeez, really? You look young. I didn't know it was going to give you 60.
Well, I've been fighting fire since I was 18, so I've got about 55 years of firefighting.
How are your lungs?
My lungs are in pretty good shape because I never smoked.
But you've been around smoke your whole life.
And I try to avoid it when I'm on fires. But
how do you avoid smoke on a fire?
You stayed upwind.
Ah. It is a hazard, though, right?
It is. Coincidentally, upwind is also the safest place to be from the fire itself. And so our typical attack on a fire is to get to the heel of the fire first, which is the windward side. And that's the side where the flames are the lowest and there's no smoke. That's where we will start building our fire line. And then we'll work around the flanks to finally the head.
Excellent. Well, thank you for joining me today. Very enlightening. Fire talk today. Wildfire talk with Tim Sexton, the wildfire and program manager for the Klamath Tribes. Do you have any interest in retiring soon, or are we going to see you around for a while?
Well, I took this job a couple of years ago with the plan that I was going to build the fire program and then retire. And part of the challenge is to develop a continuing funding stream and to get the folks that we've hired skilled to be able to replace me. So that's going to take another 2 or 3 or 4 years. And so I'll be around for 2 or 3 or 4 years until we get that funding stream in place and skilled folks to replace me.
Retirement? Who needs retirement? I suppose when you do retire, you probably go near the ocean or something.
Well, I retired from the Forest Service in 2022, and my son took me to Belize, which was very enjoyable. I intend to go back.
Sounds good to me. No fires there, but tsunamis.
Yeah, they do.
All right, Tim Sexton, thank you for joining me today on the Klamath Tribes podcast.
Thank you very much.